Welcome, everyone, to a brand new episode of Flipside Focus. I am your host, the random dude, Josh. And with me, as always, is my good pal, compadre. I can't word today. Either way, my amazing friend from across the pond, Johnny the Machine Hughes. Johnny, how are you, friend?
I am very well. I have been called many things, so, you know, camaraderie, compadre, whatever. I get it.
You know, there's worse things I could have said.
Yeah, there's worse C words to be called, definitely.
Well, I mean, given how my performance was on Jeopardy on the Definitive Crusade,
I thought you were going to pull it out of the bag.
You know, I thought so too, but Freya was just on a roll, so I was kind of screwed at that point.
You had a chance, but you know, Dr. Tompkins did you in.
Yeah, if you guys didn't catch the episode of the Definitive Crusade, go back and listen to that after this episode, and you'll understand. You'll understand. Yeah. But we are not here
to listen to the end at all. That's all I'm saying.
But we're obviously not here to talk about the big two. We are here to talk all things indie because that's what this show's about. I'm excited for the books that we're talking about today.
I've got to be honest, I am absolutely pleasantly surprised by one of them. One of them blew my socks off, as I thought it would. But I looked through it and I was like, wow. I had this stupid grin on my face from like one side to the other just reading it. Good choice on this. Good choice.
Awesome. 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 Well, let's go ahead and jump into In Focus, talk about some books today. Shall we start with your pick or my pick, or should we leave it up to the coin?
Ooh, we have a coin.
We have a coin. This is my classic Pogs Slammer from back in the 90s, my Mortal Kombat Slammer.
So, get over here. You know,
we'll go Dragon Side will be my pick. Mortal Kombat Side will be yours.
All right. Come on, Mortal Kombat.
Oh, geez. All right. Your pick is up first. Mortal Kombat Side.
Oh, my God. All right. Okay. So I kind of went, for my pick, I went a little bit 90s. So having that pog around is probably definitely a good call. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to say that the indie book started in the 90s. That would be an absolute massive insult to everything that came beforehand. All right. And I'm not going to do that. What I am going to say is that the image implosion that came across the 90s put indies on the racks where they could be seen is pretty much how I'm going with this. One of the big producers of books that shipped on time was Mark Silvestri. And when you think Mark Silvestri, you think Cyberforce, you think Witchblade, and of course you think Darkness. Now this book is the 25th anniversary of the first issue. Written by one of my favorite writers, Garth Ennis. Pencils by Mark Silvestri, inks by Bat, colors by Steve Furchow, and letters by Dennis Helsler. Now, I will say this for all you people who are going to go bonkers at me, no matter what you say, no matter who you say it to, for me, the definitive X-Men artist was always Mark Silvestri.
Oh, I agree. Right? I wholeheartedly agree with that.
I get it. Jim Lee, I get Paul Smith. Paul Smith's up there. He's on my top three. You know, I get John Byrne. But for me, it's Silvestri. Mm-hmm. Hands down. All right. And this book is kind of taking his style to, I guess, its next level. So story is quite simple. He's a hitman who does bad things. Awful things, and it pretty much is gratuitous of the 90s feel. There is links with Witchblade in there, and him and Sarah from the Witchblade book do cross over quite handsomely a number of times. But this first issue is pretty much gratuitous and it sets the scene of what to expect. I'm not going to say it's a pot boiler. I'm not going to say it's like wordy, but it's surprisingly good and it's surprisingly bang on. Because there's a bit where he pulls the girl. Let me just see, because I know you're looking through it. So it's early doors. He's pulling the girl at the bar and the bartender says, oh, you're evil. He goes, well, why am I evil? I think it's on page. It looks like around page. Where am I? I can't see the page numbers. I'm not counting with my fingers. He goes, why am I evil? He says, oh, well, she's retarded. He goes, she's not retarded. And the barman goes, well, you've just offered her a role. She's an actress. Just offered her a role on The Simpsons, a walk-on part. And, of course, The Simpsons are cartoon. So it's like, oh, you know, how brain dead do you need to be? Mm-hmm. But eventually the guy gets his comeuppance, and when his comeuppance happens, that's when all the demon stuff starts happening. He gets in a funky suit, funky colours towards the end, extolling the virtues away from, you know, details just going for shapes. You know, it's Silvestri. You know what you're going to get. You're going to get sexy girls. You're going to get well physique guys. It's the 90s. This is what comic books were about at the time. And, you know, I think if you go back now, would this stuff fly now? Well, it should do, because Deniscope still have a business doing it. But I think for me, the extension of Silvestri's art is just gorgeous to look at this. And when you look back at some of his earlier stuff, it can be a little bit haphazard, a little bit scratchy. I think here it's just clean, it's bold, it's big, it's got that 90s square shoulders thing going on. Mm. Yeah, I think for a book that I didn't really read the first time around, I can see why people jumped on Image, because, I mean, this is a totally different book to what you're getting from DC or Marvel at the time, which is Image all around, isn't it?
Yeah. So when it comes to Darkness, the comics was never my first introduction to the Darkness. My introduction to it was the games. Because if you think back to, it was right after the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3 came out. Mm-hmm. That's when the first game came out. And I remember being that one of the first games I played on that console. And oh my hell, it was fun. And so to be able to read this and enjoy the story, now I want to go back and play the games again.
There you go. Inspiration strikes in me.
Oh yeah. Well, and I definitely love the tie-in with Witchblade.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Witchblade is a fantastic series.
See, I came late to the party with Witchblade. I think I started reviewing it on Crusaders around issue, I think probably the last 10 issues. I probably did it. I did the final issue, and then I did a lot of the new stuff, you know, with the art by Roberto Ingrata, which was different, to say the least.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest. I dismiss Witchblade as a tits and ass book.
Oh, it's totally a tits and ass book.
Right? And then...
It's a great tits and ass book.
Exactly. But then she evolved... You know, Sarah evolved, her relationships evolved, it moved away from, you know, just the tits and ass. And I think whilst that's all well and good, I think a lot of people enjoyed that, because the second series, the one we've just talked about, the Roberto and Gracia one, only lasted something like 18 issues. And you think that Witchblade was like in the 150s, 157, something like that, before it got knocked on the head. Yeah. So that, you know, that's a fair chunk of time for a semi swimsuit armor wearing alien hybrid chick.
Yeah, but given the world of Darkness, I feel it fits very well.
Totally.
And I have to agree, the artwork in this is spot on. Just it's dark and gritty, and it's perfect. It fits the. It fits the story. It fits the characters.
It's of its time.
You can't go wrong with it.
Mm. I think it's very much of its time. And when you look back, I think it's some of the creators that have worked on this type of book, same with Witchblade, you've got one of my favorite guys, Stefan Sijic, you know, who's done Sunstone. He did a couple of stuff for the Black Label books, which is probably his claim to mainstream fame. But, you know, you look at Sunstone, you see some of the painted work in that, regardless about the topic, which is a little bit racy to say the least, it's great work. And you can see very much how books like Darkness and Witchblade have sort of like informed his aesthetic, as it were, because it's kind of like taking it, you know, to that next phase. If you think this is just, boom, this is pencils and inks. When you talk to people like Sijic, who then puts more, texture to it, it just, you know, this is where he cut his teeth on books like this. And you got to think to yourself,
yeah,
you know, being an image book, being an indie book, they don't have any sort of boundaries to maintain, which is one of the big pulls we like about indie books. You know, if they want to go out in left field, they can go in left field. Nobody says you have to do. No one says you have to pass on third down. You can run if you want.
You don't even have to punt on fourth down.
You can. You know what? I've had enough. I don't want any more. Punt on first. That's what I would think. Punt on first. I don't want the ball. In fact, you know what? If my defense was sus, if my offense was sus, and I lost the toss, and I was chosen to kick. To receive the ball first, I'd be like, you know what? First down, put it back to them. There you go. Have it back. I'll force you to have it. I will force you to have it.
At that point, just here. I'm just going to throw a pick six. Here you go. Boop.
Maybe not that far.
I mean, I guess you're if you're the Browns.
Hey, I think someone like Marino has the record for pick sixes.
We'll have to look that up. Because Now, okay, comics and football. This is what happens on this show. So if you don't know anything about football, yeah. Let's see here.
Who has the most picks? Brett Favre has 31. Yeah. Dan Marino and Joe Namath are tied at 28. There you go. So I was close. Yeah.
You were very close. You know, that doesn't surprise me, but I had all the comics. Honestly, I loved this book. I thought it was a fantastic read. And if you've never read any of the Darkness books, this is a great one to come into.
Definitely. I'm not sure what the prices are for the back issue for this. So, if you know, you might be able to pick up some of the trades quite cheaply, I imagine. But, yeah. Go check it out.
I wonder if they're on. You'd think they'd be on Comixology.
Yeah, maybe they are. But hey, I'm not all about digital. You've got to own your comic, own it, feel it.
There's nothing better than taking the comic out of the
plastic comic condom,
opening it up. The condom. You got to sniff it. If you're not sniffing your comics, you're not doing it right. I think I killed that joke, which I feel is a great segue into the next book. Because it's a joke that'll never die. Jokes for days. Jokes for days.
You are.
But the next book we're going to be talking about is Blake Undying. This was written by Jason Cook with art by Ezequiel Rubio, colors by Giovanna Plata, letters by Nikki Sherman. And this, I didn't quite know what to make of this book when I first picked it up. But the more I read into it, the more I loved it.
Yeah.
So the premise of the story is Blake finds out that he has a very unique ability. He cannot die. And he figures this out by trying to commit suicide. Now, obviously, suicide is a very real topic, and it is something, you know, that does happen. Obviously, there's a lot going on in this guy's life that he has tried to kill himself in various ways. He tried to electrocute himself in the bathtub, tried to behead himself, drink drain cleaner, sleeping pills, stake through the heart, drowning, jumping off a bridge. I think at one point he was even hit by a train. This guy cannot die. And it's just kind of his path on realizing that he's going to, for lack of better words, turn on the world and take matters into his own hands when it comes to fighting crime and things like that. But it's not your typical superhero book. And I think that's what I appreciated most about it. I thought the artwork in this was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Very dark and gritty and really fits the tone of the book. And I don't know about you, but the conversation doctor, that entire scene.
I wondered where it was going for a while. Yeah, and then obviously the conclusion. So yeah, it's a good shout.
Yeah.
Is it a unique character? Is it a unique thing? Because I've made a couple of notes as I was reading it, and I've written Captain Scarlet. You remember Captain Scarlet in the Mysterons?
Do we know you can hear us, Earthmen? We will do something to the Earth in whatever time frame we say.
Yeah, so Captain Scarlet was part Mysterion, so he couldn't die. And then, of course, my favorite immortal. You know, everyone was all about save the world, save the cheerleader. I was all about screw the world, screw the cheerleader. But you know. So I get it. This sort of thing does happen in different medias and stuff. This is the book that made me smile, to be fair. I was reading it, I'm thinking, where's this going? And the doctor scene was just fantastic. Well, absolutely, totally well observed. A doctor who has absolutely no interest. He's not really listening, he's just hearing the words and not listening to what's being said, which is great. I thought the conversation he had with his mate at the start, his manager, where he was saying, oh, we're going to have to put you on an attendance plan. I used to work in a contact center. I had to put people on attendance plans and all that sort of stuff. It was like, oh my God, it's like, I'm back there. You know, it was really, really like spot on, well observed, I think. There are a couple of things you've got to watch out for in this book that kind of very much like the Dr. Leslie Tompkins thing that we mentioned earlier. There's something that happens early doors, and if you miss it, the conclusion of this book won't make as much sense. All right? Mm-hmm. But you've got to pay attention, because what's happening early doors and what happens in the conclusion gives you some indication of what the main thrust of this story is. It's not just about one guy. It's not just about one guy having to make a difference because he's got, you know, the powers. And with great powers comes the ability to cost more than $50 worth of damage, it seems.
Yeah.
But it's a well-observed book. It's funny in a dark, morbid kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
And the art, whilst the art isn't probably like, I'm going to say blow away art, whilst you're showing someone getting shot, that's great timing. Whilst it's probably not blow away art, you're absolutely right, Josh. It fits the book brilliantly. You know, it's kind of where we are. It doesn't, some of the poses are a little bit out, a little bit of perspectives are a little bit wonky, but I don't have a problem with that. This isn't that sort of book where everything has to be like bang on exact. It's a real life book. The colors are nice, and I mean that genuinely, not in
the, yeah,
yeah. The colors work. I think the colors give you that tone and that darkness creeping in feel, which I think is massively prevalent throughout this book. I'm very interested to see how it goes. If this book was really, as I say, it's the one that surprised me. With the darkness, I knew what I was going to get. This, I had no idea. By the time I was finished, I was like, wow, it's one of the best books I've read probably this week. Yeah,
I think my picks in the indie department are a lot better than...
Well, last time you were on TGC, you talked about Teen Titans Go, so, you know.
I don't want to talk about that. we're talking about Blake and Brian here. But no, I don't know about
go for it.
Did Blake kind of have that Tom Hardy / Eddie Brock feel?
Yeah.
Does that connection I was making, especially at, you know, when he goes to buy the beer, it's kind of that same feel.
He's definitely got a fed up with the world kind of thing. What I would say, when you read the opening paragraph within the first cover, it says something about in a world where crime is rampant, business is corrupted, and the entire democracy and humanity spirals ever downwards. Try not to get too hooked onto that. That's not a huge part of the story. This could just be happening today. It's not as if we're living in a dystopic future or some world where everything's sort of like super bad. This could be happening in loads of neighborhoods as we speak. But yeah, there's a certain desperation, a quiet desperation to him. And, you know, he's fed up with life. He's fed up with something. And now he's just at that tether now where he's realized that, you know, he doesn't have to take the crap off everybody because there's no real ramification.
At least there appears to be no real ramification.
Da, da, da. Well, the fact that that opening paragraph had said that the government can't stop him. So I'm interested to see how that part works into it. Obviously, this is issue number one.
See, I'm hoping it doesn't go that way. I'm hoping for a more personal story out, to be honest. You know, I mean, how many times have we read stuff where, you know, the government's to blame or there's a conspiracy theory or there's this or there's that? I'm rooting for a really sort of like personal story. When you look at kind of like what the synopsis for the next couple of issues are, it looks like hopefully it's going to be, you know, that sort of element. I'd hate for this book to descend into like cops turning up and trying to shoot the crap out of him.
I see that being a portion.
Yeah, maybe, but
given what we've seen so far in issue one,
mm-hmm.
maybe the government thing's going to be more of a subplot in the main plot line. At least that's my hope.
Cool. Excellent. But yeah, it's definitely worth a pickup. Definitely.
Yeah.
So, you know, spend the money, go and pick up the book because, you know, it is without a doubt one of the best books I've read this week.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. By far. But speaking of other amazing books, I believe you wanted to talk about your favorites.
Whoa. I want to give a quick shout out to Anthony Del Col. Now, regular listeners will think, Anthony Del Col, where have I heard this name before? He's the writer of the Nancy Drew book, The Death of Nancy Drew. And I will say that this last issue, bearing in mind, I've been in it for the whole ride, the whole six issues. I was blown away by it, absolutely. Because I had it pegged. I did my amateur detective stuff. I was like, right, it's going to be Colonel Mustard in the library with the candlestick. I had it in my head. That's who it is. I thought it could be somebody else who would, which would have thrown the whole thing out of whack. And I was like, nah, it can't be that. But honestly, Anthony Del Col, what a master pacer. What a master storyteller. He has absolutely done brilliantly. He's dangled these little carrots, these little clues. And then in this final issue, which isn't massively full of stuff, he's done this, you know, it's not rampant busy as, but he manages to tie off every single one. So if you thought it was that person, you're going to be in for a shock. If you thought it was that person, you're in for a shock. If you thought it was this person, guess what? You're in for a shock. You know, it was absolutely well conceived, well plotted. The art got a little bit ropey towards the end, which I've been saying for a while on that book. But the whole interaction between Nancy and her boys, the actual who did it, absolutely, what a great read it was. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
So that brings up a question then. If the story within a book is just blowing you away and the art's kind of maybe getting a little bit of fatigue, if you will, does the story make up for that art fatigue?
God, yes. I can safely say I can read a good story with bad art every time. Because I can't read a bad story with good art. I can't do it. If it makes no sense to me, story-wise, no matter how pretty the picture, it's just a pinup. They've got to work in conjunction. Yeah. But for me, and I guess it's just my opinion, for me, it is clearly at least 60-40 writing.
Okay.
For me.
I feel like...
You really have to take the opposite side now.
No, I would definitely agree, but I think, and maybe this is just given the number of podcasts I've been on with you, I would say it's more 70% writing, 30% art.
Oh, fair enough. I'll take that.
Because I've read plenty of indie titles where the art is crap, but the writing is good and vice versa.
Yeah.
I mean, and we've seen that with Big Two, where it flips in that the writing sucks, but the art is amazing, or the story has us hooked and the artwork kind of goes a little wonky. I mean, we did see that with the Joker War, where the story itself was good. The art got a little wonky at times.
It did. So, I think I don't want to bring up Big Two particularly.
I just mentioned.
I'm trying to think from an indie point of view. So I liked. I'm trying to think of an indie book. I'll give you the best example I've got is probably Dark Metals. From the DC, and not a DC book, sorry. Right? Greg Capullo's art is gorgeous. Greg Capullo draws brilliantly. He's fantastic. But as soon as they write the word Batmanium as a metal in that book, I have switched off. You have jumped the shark. You know, and it just goes to show on TDC, we've never even looked at any of the dark metals, death metal books now, because we know what. So, you know, we know what. I'm trying to think indie wise. I tell you, Vampy, sometimes Vampy or Red Sonja, they're at a little bit heavy at time, you know, because they don't know how to, you know, draw the sexy woman or the Vampy in the swimsuit and all that sort of stuff. But the stories are really good.
Yeah.
So you kind of, you've got to kind of get with that. And sometimes you can get a book like, I know I'm picking on Dynamite, I'm really sorry, but you get a book like Deja Thoris, for example. And Deja Thoris is walking around in a bikini all the time because she's on Mars, whatever that means. But the story goes nowhere.
Mm.
It's like she's saving Mars from the monsters or from the indigenous species. Yeah, she's done that already, you know? So yeah, I'm definitely a writer first kind of guy.
And maybe this is a good example. The Power Rangers Shattered Grid storyline. The story on that was absolutely fantastic. I loved how they integrated all the different Rangers into one massive universe. But there were times where the artwork itself kind of went a little, it definitely experienced the artwork fatigue.
Did it morph into something else?
Yes.
See what I did there?
You look at that story and the whole Lord Draken storyline. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. It was something new and fresh that, in all reality, the Rangers needed, because when you look at the core of what the Rangers are, you know, teenagers taking on the world, protecting the world. But with Lord Draken, it took that and completely flipped it, which is why I honestly enjoyed that story. Yeah. So,
I mean, it's probably the art that's going to catch your eye on the rack. I get it. I'm not a complete moron to this. You know, you see a good cover, like, ooh, you're going to pick up the book, right? And if the interior art is like, I want the story to be good. I want the story to be good.
Yeah. Oh, I think we're both in agreement. 70-30 is the preferred. That's just sweet. Yeah. 70-30. Well, speaking of books that have fantastic writing, at least in my opinion, let's take a quick little break and have just a short little ad about a book that you guys are most likely going to want.
Hey guys, this is Frank Ogle, writer of Dead End Kids and No Heroin. You recently heard me on the show to talk about my new book, Dead End Kids, The Suburban Job. Dead End Kids, The Suburban Job follows three former friends who have all been deeply affected by the events of September 11th as they struggle alone to cope with the long-term effects of that tragic day and what happens to them when they find a bag of cash stolen from a local drug kingpin. I just wanted to drop by and remind you guys that Dead End Kids' Suburban Job is currently up for pre-order. For those of you who haven't checked out the original Dead End Kids, The Suburban Job is a fresh start, a new cast, and a new place with a new crime. For those of you who love the original series, we've got the entire creative team back together again to bring you more of what you loved the first time around. But whether you're a new or returning reader, I think you'll really dig the new series. If you want to check out Dead End Kids' Suburban Job, be sure to get your pre-orders in at your local comic shop by December 4th.
I love Suburban Kids. They're Dead End Kids.
I think I like the first series. Definitely the first series was really good. I've spoken to Frank a couple of times. He's he's got his finger on the pulse.
Oh yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, and I had the opportunity to talk to him about that particular book. And I'm super stoked for the direction he's taken it. I think it has a lot of potential. So, but speaking of potential, it is time to talk Kickstarter, because Kickstarter, I truly believe, is now the lifeblood of indie comics. So for Kickstarter, we've got two different projects. I think we should
flip the coin. Flip the coin. Flip the coin. Flip the coin.
Honestly, it works. So we'll go. Mortal Kombat will be my pick first.
Get over here.
The Dragon will be my pick with Mortal Kombat side is Johnny. So I kind of feel like Two-Face doing this.
Yeah. Heads or tails, kitty cat.
Wait. Oh, Johnny's first.
Booyah.
What do you got for us, Johnny?
Well, I have this little book, and it's called Like Father, Like Daughter. All right.
Oh. Okay.
It's a 7-issue superhero drama. So I probably set myself up earlier by saying screw the world, screw the cheerleader, but no, sorry. A high school girl, Cassie Ryder, inherits the very powers that made her superhero father leave their family. All right, so basically a dad with superpowers leaves his wife and his daughter to become invulnerable, the world's only superhero. 10 years later, the daughter discovers she's inherited the very same powers. All right, so currently, a dad's been captured by the KGB. Will Cassie follow in her father's footsteps and become the hero, or will she give it all up and just stay the family person? There you go. It's kind of like a bit of a coming of age story. You look at the Kickstarter, there's all different types of variations on the idea of the character. You know, you've got the lo-fi hip hop cover by Alana L, who has gone for a superheroic pose. We've also got things like sitting around in My Little Unicorn t-shirts and playing guitars with the friends and stuff. It's a mix for sure. But if you think of things like, I know who's popular at the moment, Geek Girl from Sam Johnson's massively popular. So if you like that sort of thing, this is going to be of the same similar ilk. You know, young girl, high school, with great power comes some responsibility. I just think when we talk about indie books, I think we need to focus on some of the things that got us into comic books in the first place. And stuff like this, I mean, coming of age stories, that's Spider-Man every time, isn't it, really? Yeah. That's the one you think of. But that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. So the writer is called Kat, I'm going to say this wrong, I'm sorry, Kalamia.
I believe that's right.
Sorry?
I believe that's right, as I'm looking at
her name. Cool, excellent. So she does comic book reviews. She works for Newsarama. She does some stuff for DC. She's got bylines on IGN, Fandom, and TV Guide. So when it comes to, you know, finger on the pulse, she's definitely there. She gets to see what people are looking at, what people are reading, you know, gets a bit of an inside view, I suppose, of the comic book industry. Man, I wish I knew somebody like that. Oh, wait, that could be me. artist is Wayne Brown, who's been an artist all his whole life. And then you've got Lisa Miller, who's the colorist. She's worked on all sorts of books like Garfield, Peanuts, Bravest Warriors, and she's worked with Boom Studios a lot. So you know what sort of quality you're going to get from that point of view. When I think about indie books, I'm always like people like Boom, IDW, Xenoscope. I know I take the mickey out of them a lot, but those are and Dynamite. Those are the four companies I think who have got their coloring process down perfect. Yeah. Definitely, you know, Xenoscope. You cannot look at a Xenoscope book and think this has been put together cheaply. You know, the colors are fantastic. So, you know, this is where, you know, people get to cut the teeth on Kickstarters and stuff. Pledges, let's see. If you pledge more than... I can't get down the page. How do I move? Try and get down the page. Let's see.
$10 or more.
Yeah, $10 or more. Help me out on this then, because my scroll button. There it is. I found it. There it is. Sorry about this. Right. So $1 or more, you get the Indie Comic Book Bundle. So you get 8 digital comics. Those are different ones. For 5 or more, you get issue 7. 10 or more gets you physical and digital copies. Okay, and to give you some idea and perspective on this, because you're thinking, what's he banging on about? I think somewhere in the region, they're about 90% funded. So the goal pledge for this is £3,789. So that's in dollars, $4,263. And that's pledged against a $5,000 goal. All right,
but so that's the 23 days to go. That's with to go at the time of recording too. So
yeah, so 23 days to get that. I mean, it sounds better in UK money, I'm afraid, because it says pledged as a £3,789 total goal, and they've got 3-2 already. So they're only UK wise, they're only about £500 out in with 23 days. So there you go. I think yeah, books like this, you know, you do get that coming of age story a lot, but I think the family element gives it some resonance. I think one of the things that a lot of people will be aware of is the fact that more people come from broken homes that are part of nuclear families now than there have been. So I think there's going to be a lot of, you know, a lot of buy-in from a lot of people from that point of view. And to be fair, don't we always grow up to be our parents at some point? I think I said to my kid, if you don't turn that racket down.
I think the one out of all of these that really kind of caught my eye was really the $25 or more, because of the fact that you're going to get issues 1 through 7.
That's the one you should go for, definitely. Mm-hmm. Where else can you get seven books for $25?
Definitely. Well, and not only that, you're also getting the indie comic book bundle, which is everything in the $1 slot. So you're getting 7 issues of Like Father, Like Daughter, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You're getting 14 books for $25.
And I'll tell you right now, looking at the books they've got there in that bundle, Spencer and Locke, that, if you like Calvin and Hobbes, Spencer and Locke is the boy. It is an absolute adult version of Calvin and Hobbes. Well worth it, that one.
Yeah.
I think I've seen Miskatonic High as well.
I think so.
Yeah.
See, yeah. I mean, just look it through. I mean, even the $40 pledge, a full physical catch up 1 through 7, and you're getting the indie comic book bundle. So you're getting physical copies of 1 through 7, digital copies of 1 through 7. And then, so you're actually getting 21 books, 7 of which are physical.
Just remember to check your shipping on that, though. Because obviously, you know, with a lot of Kickstarters, through no fault of their own, they can't always dispatch across overseas. So just make sure you check your postage rates and stuff like that. All right. I'd hate for you to book in and realize that you're not going to get the physicals. But
Always good to read before you click pledge. So, but speaking of reading,
before you're clicking, we're not talking about dodgy sites again, are we?
Well, if we're talking about dodgy sites, then there's a chance you'll stumble upon dodgy in a green thong. That's better than Al wearing it.
I'm worried that you know both of that as facts. That scares me a little bit.
Listen to the earlier episode of Flip Side Focus.
I think I'll just stick to my fishnets and be happy with it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's much better. Much better. However, kind of going along with fishnets, because I feel it works really well. My pick for this Kickstarter is Steam Wars, which totally has that Star Wars feel with steampunk wrapped up in it. So you'll have to excuse my dog in the background. He's losing his marbles and then some. So STEM Wars, created by Fred Perry, honestly, the best way to describe this is steampunk Star Wars.
Wow, you sold it well there.
Well, you know, it's all about that. It's all about the sound effects. Because why not? Honestly, this book just looks absolutely fantastic and just a fun read in general. If you like steampunk, if you like the giant galaxy type world, if you will, you're not going to be disappointed with this book. And the fact that you can get a hardbound copy of the book, I mean, for $35, that's a screaming deal.
Definitely. I like the idea of Star Wars made steampunk. I always like how steampunk is so innovative, or innovative, depending on the point pronunciation of how it sort of like moves, gives us the world that we recognize, but not quite so. You know, the idea that, you know, they've got to use steam, or they've got to use gas, or whatever they've got to use to get around and stuff. I think it's one of those ideas that seem so simple, but it's done so, so well.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, and you know, we talk about the artwork, you know, so much in other podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
I like the approach that they're focusing what's on the foreground and not mm-hmm. trying to completely fill the entire background. They're really utilizing the less is more mentality to their advantage.
Definitely.
And just in the panels that they've shown us, really, really brings that to the forefront, which I appreciate.
And I think a lot of people get a buzz out of seeing the Star Wars elements thrown in there. Because, you mean, you look at it and you cannot escape but notice the Star Wars bits. You know, I mean, look at that cover from the first one. It's Star Wars A New Hope, practically. Yeah. You know, and all the other things have, you know, there's a, if you look for the $20 down the page there, soundtrack CD, that's very much a Return of the Jedi style, or Empire Strikes Back style, at least. You know, it's they're all there. You can pick and choose, and you've got to think to yourself, well, you know, Star Wars in itself is a mismatch of things like Seven Samurai and The Magnificent Seven.
Mm-hmm.
Why not take it the next step and mix it up with some steam?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I completely agree.
That book looks gorgeous, the hardcover.
Oh, yeah. But the other cool thing that I appreciate, especially about this Kickstarter, is they also included a video trailer.
Oh, and good. Let's see it.
Let's just share this and enjoy. So here we
Well, I'm sold. That was gorgeous.
Right? I like the design of the lightsabers. Mm. Where it looks like just a metal rod that's electrified. So, yeah, no complaints. Definitely one worth getting. And, yeah, you are not going to be disappointed whatsoever with this. Johnny, I've left you speechless.
You have? You have? I'm absolutely... I just like how they've taken something that is so familiar and kind of just given it an old-fashioned look. You know, one of the things I love about the Star Wars universe, especially say from A New Hope and up to maybe Jedi, I like the fact that it's a lived-in universe. You can see that things don't always work. It's not like Star Trek where everything works all the time. You know, and this book seems to epitomize that sort of stuff. Yeah, there was a picture in the trailer of like the ship, and automatically I'm thinking, man, what a piece of junk. You know, and I'm like, you know, that's a Star Wars line. It's you know, I think it's a great shout. I think it's a good call, and I think it's definitely something that people should be looking into. Definitely, even your Wookiee in the background agrees.
Oh yeah, it's either he agrees or he really wants to get out of the crate. I'm one of the two, but at the end of the day, knowing that this has already met its goal means you're going to get the book guaranteed. So
I might send them an email and see if I can get a review copy.
Ooh. Maybe even bring them on to OTP.
Yeah, that would be class.
So Fred Perry, when you hear this, there's a standing invitation for you to come on to Outside the Panels to talk about Steam Wars.
Consider it done. Yes, I'm going to do some research on that. Sounds like a plan.
Well, Johnny, this has been a fun episode of Flipside Focus. I enjoy this show so much.
I enjoy this show. The fact that there's so much good talent out there that doesn't always get to see the light of day, and we get to shine our little lives on it. I think, I think we talk about some of the good stuff that's out. You know, and even if something. The thing I like about indie books is even if something isn't quite your cup of tea, give it a chance because you know what? It pretty much will be. Just because it doesn't have a big S or a big bat on it doesn't mean that it's crap. All right? Give it a chance.
Kind of a nice break from...
Yeah. Tell me about it.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's going to be it for this episode of Flipside Focus. Make sure to check out all of our shows on Undercover Cape Podcast Network, including
The Definitive Crusade.
And I believe you've got a...
we have a new show. Yes, we have a new show. How did I forget this? As my memory's gone, we have a new show, and it's called The Old Timers Comic Book Show, where we look back and we look at some of the great... comic books of the past. We're not just looking at the classic books, right? We're taking a little bit of a sidestep. Look out for episode 3 because it's an indie special.
Ooh.
All the books, all indie. All right, there you go.
Well, yep. Make sure to check that out. That is exclusively on YouTube. So that's going to be the only place you're going to find it. So head over to YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to Comic Crusaders YouTube channel because that's the only place you will find that. And then also make sure to check out all of our other shows as well. But on that note, this is the Random Dude Josh with Johnny the Machine Hughes. And we will catch you guys
on the flip. Next time.
Visit UndercoverCapes.com for the latest and greatest podcasts via the Undercover Capes Podcast Network. Also visit our parent company website, ComicCrusaders.com, all about comic pop culture.